Welcome to The Catholic Arsonist.
This could be like an old-time news recording.
Yeah.
Father Martin has this paper right in front of him. He just checked his watch. And we are live from the ACCS.
Welcome back.
Smart watches aren't a good thing sometimes. Because you feel my phone
so
goes off and then my watch.
I get my phone off today.
You know, starts going. So.
The world needs him.
Yep.
Well.
Very busy man.
All right. So what are we talking about?
Well, first of all, welcome back to The Catholic Arsonist. It's been,
We've been 2 weeks? Hiatus.
Yeah. So I apologize. I was on a conference last week with the teens, and so I was pretty much MIA, and Shana was on vacay the week before, and the priests are busier than ever, so, but we're back and ready to rock.
Let's do it.
I think. So Father Martin is leading us today fearlessly into what feels like a fire pit.
Yeah.
No, so I just thought that it would be appropriate for us to discuss a little bit, not with even presenting any solutions of any sort, but just to acknowledge all the tension that's going on in our society right now, especially, you know, when you, in the midst of a pandemic, all of a sudden have these racial tensions that reemerge in our society. That I thought that as I've received emails and comments from people on both sides, if there are sides to the issue, that it'd be good for us just to kind of have an honest and frank conversation about it, just to kind of acknowledge what we like to say, the elephant in the pew, so to speak. And so I thought that we could talk a little bit about racism, about maybe our own thoughts surrounding it, about any experiences of bias in our own lives. And I guess, like, what makes us so uncomfortable to even talk about it? You know, I think we obviously live in a hyper-reactive society right now. And so it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't. If I say something, I'm wrong. If I don't say something, I'm wrong. And I think that we need to be able to have the courage and really just have the forums where we can start to have some honest and real conversations. And, you know, one of the emails that I responded back to, somebody that sent me, I said, what we're talking about isn't just one issue. We're talking about a spiritual issue, a psychological issue, a demographic issue, a political issue. And so when we bring it up, it's kind of like, okay, well, what exactly are you speaking about when you say that Black Lives Matter or that racism exists, which it does, I think. I think that we can all agree with that. Around the globe, racism exists. And, you know, what is our call, right? And so the three of us sitting here in white West County suburbia, like, what does the gospel call us to? And I think that's the most important thing for us to kind of remember, is that we always ask, what is the Lord asking of me? Like, what does the gospel call me to? And how do I respond to these things through the gospel lens instead of sometimes my own anxiety, my own fear, my own anger that can kind of come up? You know, like, I don't like to be thought of as a racist. And so if somebody calls me one, then I like to go on the defensive right away and say, well, don't call me a racist. Like, I don't do that. You know, I don't blah, 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 you know. And then all of a sudden I find myself, usually not in a literal, but at least a psychic, like in my imagination, in these shouting matches with people, you know, it never really ends
well.
But
you win every time.
sometimes not. But what is it inside of me that is afraid to maybe acknowledge sometimes that I'm perceived that way, or that just my lifestyle can be perceived that way? Or can I acknowledge in some way when people talk about white privilege, and maybe that makes me very uncomfortable to say, like, well, that doesn't mean my life hasn't been easy. And I didn't, you know, we were talking about before we started recording, you know, I didn't choose to be born where I was born. I didn't choose to have the skin color that I have. But at the same time, neither did the young African American that's growing up on Minnesota Avenue, or you know, the people that we visited down in Uganda, they didn't choose where they were born or what country they live in or what part of the city they live in. And so the gospel really does challenge us to say, what does honoring the person in front of us look like? And what are some of the forces that are in our society, and maybe like even within me, that influence the way that I view people? And if I'm honest, I have to say that, yeah, like, and I know some people even take issue with this, but where I would say, I acknowledge that I am biased, because I think bias is part of being human. Mm-hmm. So I prefer one type of flavor over another when it comes to food. I like salty food more than sweet food, you know, so I'm biased in that way if I'm going to look at a menu. But when bias is applied to how we view other people, that's where it becomes the seat of racism. And can I acknowledge the need in my own heart to weed that out if it starts to kind of grow in some way?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think, yeah, the thing that keeps coming back whenever these conversations come up or whenever I see things in the news, the word uncertainty is just so present within me, at least. And I'll preface whatever I say on this episode by saying I'm sorry if like something that I say is offensive in some way, because there is so much uncertainty, at least for myself, surrounding it. But that's in terms of, and Father mentioned this, like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. I don't always know how to respond to certain things that are presented to us in the news, to charged conversations that I have, to things that are said that are completely inappropriate or things that make a lot of sense. Like, I don't always know what to say. But just throughout all these things kind of being purged from our society and all this like kind of grossness that's being like exfoliated out a little bit right now, with looking at like the state of culture, it seems way too big for my human capacity alone. And we hear like the word systemic thrown around, and even that word in and of itself makes it seem too big for me, because if it's a part of a system, then I'm only one small cog in that system, and therefore like what, how big of a role can I actually play in it, because I didn't design the system and I didn't make the laws that made Black people unable to live in certain parts of the city after the Civil War. You know, like, I was never around for those things. And so my human reaction is to go on the defensive, like Father mentioned, and just say, like, I have nothing to do with this. But I think I do, insofar as, yeah, like he mentioned, having biases, but even more so, and I've been praying about this past week, in terms of our yeah, just like praying really fervently for our parish staff, that we as a staff would be able to like minister and serve out of a place of love for the people we are attempting to serve, rather than out of a fear of what we would be perceived as if we fail at it. So like one place is, yeah, like living life out of a place of, I want to love the person in front of me, or I want to like just really fall in love with the teens I'm serving, rather than do my job from a place of, what is Father Martin going to think if I fail at this? Or what is the parish going to think if like there's not enough teens coming? And so in terms of like what's happening in society, at least with young people, and when I see their responses to things going on, there's a profound, like, I don't know what to do about it. But at the same time, I'm so afraid of what other people are going to think of me if I don't look like I have a voice, or if I don't look like I know what I'm doing. And so I'm going to project on social media that I have these opinions, or I'm going to post a black box, when really like other people might perceive me to have be not racist or whatever that looks like. But really there's so much interior work that needs to be done, because I still don't treat the person in front of me with love, no matter what their skin color is. So I think, yeah, I have no answers and I know nothing, but what I perceive to be happening with a lot of people like who like myself are uncertain. When I'm uncertain and I want to know and project that I know what's going on, I'm so focused on how others perceive me. And so as long as everyone else knows that I'm not racist and that they know that I know it's an issue, and I can kind of put up this projection of myself in a certain light, that kind of puts things at bay until it's no longer enough. Like, until it's no longer enough to not love the person in front of me. So I keep coming back to that, and that's been my prayer for us as a staff and for us with everything going on in the country. Like, I don't want to act out of fear, or out of fear of what other people are perceiving me to know. But Jesus, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to solve racism in America. But all you give me are the people in front of me. And so you have to show me legitimately, like, every day, what you desire for my life in this situation, how you desire for me to receive other people or the things happening in the news or these conversations. So I'm just rambling now, but uncertainty and not living out of a place of fear, those are the things that come up to my mind, and that's not super concrete, but that's where I'm at. I don't know if that even answered your question.
Nope, that's okay. That's right.
What was the question?
I don't know if I had a question.
That's what I was gonna say. You said no.
What was the question? Because I must have missed it.
Shana, so no, but loving the person like in front of you, right? So you began by saying like uncertainty is what you're living out of, and that you don't want to have to, right? And so you want to be able to be faithful just to love the person that's in front of you, and that's your gospel call at the moment, right? And you don't know how to solve racism, but you're going to love the person in front of you. Mm-hmm. What about as a mom? So what does that look like with the kiddos and everything's kind of going on in our society? I mean, does it not come up at all? I mean, just kind of do that? Or, you know, I see other people, and I was even on one of the marches that was in the park around here, and some of the people put their kids in their wagons and were pulling them behind, you know, and these things. So just from a mom's perspective, like, has it come up or what happens?
We haven't, bad on my part, we haven't really talked about it. We just talk about just treating people with love, like, no matter who they are. But we haven't really jumped in to everything that's, like, really happening right now. Like, I think the most I've said about, there are bad people and there are good people. One bad person should not, like, say, like, that whole group of people is bad. Or one good person doesn't mean that the whole group is good. Like, because people do bad things. And I don't know, once again, I'm not wanting to hurt anybody. Yeah. But, like, with the recent events happening, like, that cop was a bad cop. That doesn't classify all cops as bad. You know, there are bad. There are bad people. And I just want my kids to know that one person does not represent the whole body of people.
Yeah, so. which goes to stereotyping, right?
Yeah.
Which is also, an article that we were reading, what is it called? It's called The Science of Why Cops Shoot Young Black Men and How to Reform Our Bigoted Brains. How about that for a title? By Chris Money. But he talks about how actually stereotyping, thinking all lions want to eat me helps me to stay safe, right? And so for us as human beings, again, we have a tendency sometimes to categorize things. If I grow up and I think, oh, downtown is dangerous in St. Louis because we have such a segregated society. Right. Well, who lives downtown in St. Louis? So as a young person, you kind of intrinsically start to say downtown is dangerous. That's where a lot of black people in St. Louis live. Ergo, the danger lies in that community. You know, and so something as simple as that of saying like there's a crime rate. And then as you get older, now you start to realize, okay, well, why is there a higher crime rate? Well, maybe it has to do with like the socioeconomic disposition of that place. And there is no way for them to elevate themselves out. And so then it goes into education and then it goes into this. And it goes, but still like the core thought that you have for that's like a really young person is downtown at night is dangerous. Right. So don't go there. Right. And if you're walking down the street in downtown, I would dare say that, you know, if you came across a group of African-American people, you might like have a little lump in your throat or say like, oh, is this a dangerous situation for me? Mm-hmm. Right. And that is stereotyping, right? And that is part of the systemic racism, I think, that we could say does exist, where it's unintentional, where, you know, you're just trying to keep yourself and your kids safe at night, like, hey, use common sense, you know, but yeah, it just has, it overflows and has other implications, right? And then we grow up and we don't even realize, and so that's why one of the other articles we're reading was The New Threat, Racism Without Racists by John Blake, 2014. And it's where, you know, if we don't even acknowledge that we have these sort of subtle biases, and we say, like, well, I don't belong to the KKK, you know, or I don't throw the N-word around. And that, yeah, exactly. But do I have, you know, this subtle bias inside of me that helps me say, like, I would, yeah, anyway.
It's all very common. Because you've never had to consider, you've always been on the other side of those things. You've never been the one that when you're walking down the street, someone has been afraid to walk past you or something.
Right.
That's the privilege question, I think. Mm. And that's been kind of profound for me to think about. It's like, yeah, I've never used the N-word or, like you said, yeah, but I within myself have also never had to question whether or not I can walk out of a Target with like a certain bag or yeah, just no one has ever questioned my existence,
right,
which is in and of itself something I'm thankful for, you know, and it's been a blessing that other people haven't been fortunate enough to have, and it's okay for me to recognize that, and it's necessary, I think, for me to recognize that. But then it's like, okay, Alyssa, what do you do with it? I don't know. I don't know.
I think that's, you know, one of the articles or tweets or something that came up recently, he said, you know, when you're thinking about white privilege, he goes, it doesn't mean that your life is easy. It just means your skin color has never been an obstacle to you advancing. So I don't go in thinking at a job interview or anything else like, oh, this is, well, we'll see what they think because of my skin color. Right. And even then, you know, in our society, if, you know, you were to walk out of Target with an item that you didn't pay for, you could probably say, oh, I'm sorry, like I forgot to pay for it. And then you kind of get off the hook. Right. Yeah. And, but unfortunately, if you're a person of color, that's not the response. It's like, well, no, sit here while we call the police, you know? And so I think that those are just the types of like realities that I think that we can acknowledge exist. But what is the proper response, right? And so beyond, you know, some people say that this is a revolution that we have going on in our society right now. Unfortunately, I don't know if it is, because you can try to take down statues and you can try to refund or defund or try to find a new way to kind of guide police officers and those types of things. But like I said, we have these scenarios that deal with things that are on the human level, the psychological level, spiritual level, socioeconomic level, and political level. And so there's not one thing that we can do that overcomes it, you know? So the thought that I have that I'm throwing out there, maybe to everybody, is this. Two devotions that I think that we need to kind of step up maybe as a parish. So if you're listening, turn it up, here it goes. So the first one is actually a devotion that is dear to Pope Francis's heart, and it's Mary the Undoer of Knots. And it's this image of Mary, again, with this cord that she's, you know, making free. And it's the image of us kind of going to our moms when we say, like, I can't get this knot out. Yeah. And so I need you to kind of undo this for me. And when we think about all those different things that I just said, like the psychology, the economic, the political, the, you know, everything else, that we need God's help and maybe mom or mom's help, you know, to kind of say, hey, within me and then within our society, help us to kind of be able to undo these knots without destroying what is good in the process. Right? And that's the virtue of prudence, actually. So prudence is a cardinal virtue that Thomas Aquinas says is the charioteer of all the virtues. And prudence helps us to see the good that we're trying to achieve and the good way to achieve it. And so I think that sometimes what we lack in our society is that we see a good that we want to achieve, but we don't know how to get there. And so we just kind of start running towards it. And sometimes we wind up doing more harm than good, right? I would think that that would be the case, you know, to kind of shift gears a little bit. And but let's say if somebody winds up tearing down the statue of St. Louis on Art Hill, I would think that'd be a very imprudent thing to do. Because I don't think you're going to obtain the end for which you're striving. And if the end for which you're striving is a society of mutual respect, human dignity, and everything else, I think you're just going to inflame more anger in our society and more division. And so to be able to have like conversation, like honest conversation, you know, was St. Louis perfect? No. Like he wasn't, you know. And so I think that, like, even as a Catholic priest, you know, that, you know, if somebody says, well, he did things wrong in his life, yeah, right? And actually, yeah, exactly, you know. And what I hope is that it actually brings me great hope that imperfect people can become saints, you know, because of all the good that he did in his life, you know. And it's very difficult to say, like, I have no idea what people in the year 2700 are going to think about the way that I'm living my life right now, you know? And for us to kind of like think about that, you know, in the year 2700, if the earth is still here, what are people going to think about the way that you're living your life? And do you think that they're going to be pleased with the way that you speak all the time? And all, I mean, I have no idea. And that it's ridiculous to think that, right? And I doubt that St. Louis was walking around worrying about what people that live in the 600s were thinking or saying, right? There's a little statement from the California Catholic Conference when a crowd pulled down the statue of Junipero Serra. Mm-hmm. So Junipero Serra, again, Franciscan that basically founded the entire state. That's why you have San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, right? All these...
Santa Monica.
Yeah, all these Spanish names. You know, even the Mission of San Luis, right, of St. Louis. That's there. but this is what they said. I thought it was pretty good. It just said, let's see, when he walked back, it said, and if that's not enough to legitimate a public statue in the state that he did so much to create, and they were talking about how he actually walked on a broken leg back to Mexico City in defense of, you know, the natives that were living in the indigenous people of California, to defend them against abuses. And so he actually walked back to Mexico City on a broken leg. It says, if that was not enough to legitimate a public statue in the state that did so much to create, then virtually every historical figure from our nation's past will have to be removed for their failings measured in the light of today's standards. So that's the danger that I think that we have, is to say, if we find a flaw with anybody, and we see this on social media even, right? We love tearing down kings and queens, right? So in social media, when it comes to celebrities who I think live in La La Land a lot anyway, but, you know, we love as a society to be able to pull people off their pedestal. And now we're doing it literally, right? To pull people off the pedestal. And when we do that, we'll have nothing left. You know, imagine going to Washington, D.C. and having no images of George Washington, of Thomas Jefferson, of Abraham Lincoln, you know. And what we celebrate, I think, as a people is the good that they accomplished. We're not erecting statues to memorialize those failings that they had in their life, you know. And if that's the prerequisite, is that you have to be completely unblemished, well, then there's only one person that we'd have statues of, in my opinion, right?
Mm-hmm. And that'd be fine. No one wants statues of him.
exactly, right. Because he's too controversial. Like, yeah. Jesus is too controversial. And so it really is. It's kind of like this new reborn iconoclasm,
yeah,
that's taking place right now, where, yeah, any historical figure is unworthy of modern day adulation. And so we need to kind of remove these things. So anyway, I have no idea where to go from that. But I mean, if somebody said, in light of today, you know, I was reading the newspaper and somebody said, well, from a Muslim's perspective, if I walk out and I see a statue of a crusader that's sitting on top of the hill holding his sword up in the form of a cross, that's offensive to me. I can get that. Like, I can understand that. You know, when I visited Turkey, you know that the Turkish flag is it's the red flag with the crescent moon. Mm-hmm. That's from the sacking of Constantinople when the Muslims sacked the country or sacked the city so much that the blood ran so red on the ground that you could see the crescent moon reflected in the blood that was flowing. Mm-hmm. That's their nation's flag, right? It's an anti-Christian image. Not many people know that, you know, these days, but you know, I could understand as a Christian being like, this flag is offensive, you know, to us. And I don't know, like if we try to go through everything where nothing is ever going to be offensive to anybody, it's really going to be tough for us to actually coexist at all, you know. Last thought that I have, and then we'll just see what happens. I just keep talking.
This is good.
I'm going to pull a Matthew McConaughey from A Time to Kill. So it's a great movie.
All right.
So if you're, those of you that are listening to this, just imagine this for a minute. So imagine that there is a country where there is a Catholic minority and that the Catholic minority lives in relative poverty compared to their neighbors. And that when it comes to policing, that the Catholics are, you know, pulled out of their cars and imprisoned at a rate much higher than their neighbors. Imagine that this is, you know, something that's been going on for a long time. And you know, if there was a hashtag like Catholic Lives Matter and it was going on in this other country, would we rally behind it? And I think that I would say like, well, of course I would, like, you know, because it's our Catholic brothers and sisters, right? The gospel challenge is that it doesn't matter if they're Catholic or not, right? That we stand against oppression no matter what form it takes and what it looks like, which goes back to, Alyssa, what you said at the beginning, like the dignity of the human person. And so when I find myself getting really, you know, anxious or sad or angry or whatever emotion kind of comes up with what we're watching on television, I ask myself that question. I say, like, if it was Catholic Lives Matter, would I still be supporting this event? Would I be supporting this statement? Would I be supporting this action? And there's some that I would and there's some that I wouldn't, right? Because I don't think that they're prudent. I don't think that they're virtuous in the way that they're trying to pursue the ends, the good ends that they're trying to achieve. But it takes a little bit of the ire out of me, a little bit of the defensiveness out of me, and say that if it were, you know, a Catholic minority in another country, I'd be like, well, heck yeah, they should be able to march. Well, heck yeah, they should be able to have their voices be heard. Well, yeah, if there's something that's oppressive going on, they ought to be able to stand up and say that this isn't right. But when, you know, there's a Catholic majority and the tables are turned, it's kind of like, well, don't overplay your hand, you know? And so, and that's where, again, like the bias comes in, and those, the haves and the have nots, and those that happen to be the majority in any society typically are slow to want there to be change because it's nice to be the majority, you know? Take it away, ladies. There you go.
I don't have much to add, but this made me think of it. I was talking to a friend about some of these things recently, and she just commented on the fact that, and I fall into this mindset a lot of the time too, and I know kind of growing up in a suburban area, in a like just call it what it is, like majority or conservative area. It's when looking at the church, it's so easy to regard church as the dogma and the doctrine, and my responsibility is to the truth and all true things, right? Like that is such a beautiful, integral aspect of the church. But to think that the church is not found in the poor and in the downtrodden and in this case, racial minorities, like to think that that is not just as much an aspect of the church to which we are held responsible is inaccurate, and it is contrary to the gospel. So that's been my, yeah, I've been holding that kind of close in all this, and I can't say for 100% what I would do if the hashtag was Catholic Lives Matter instead of Black Lives Matter, but I know that gone are the days where we can just consider church to be going and sitting in a pew for an hour on Sunday, because it's much more than that, and like the Lord demands more from me than that. So that I would grow in love as well. But I think that's, I invite whoever is listening to this, after considering what you would do if it was Catholic Lives Matter, to consider that as well. That there is an aspect of the church that doesn't make you a bleeding heart liberal, to love people rather than just loving the truth that you abide by.
Right.
I'm just trying to think of my, what should I say? I think I can't wrap my mind around it.
Yeah, that's real. Yeah.
I'm a person when I get like things like this happen in the world. Like, example, when Donald Trump got elected and there was so much hate, I broke out with shingles because I was freaking out so much. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So I just pray. I'm like, what can I do? Mm-hmm. And in my prayer, it just keeps coming up. My theme for today was supposed to be hope and healing. And Father Martin took that oath totally different. So I guess in a way I'm like, it just makes me so sad.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to do. I'm a coward. So.
But I think, and you might have more to add on this, but I think that's such a beautiful place to be. Like, legitimately, my prayer is, Lord, what can I do? Because that's where saints are made. Like, taking where they're at in the culture and saying, Jesus, what can I do? And not in a rhetorical sense, not in a sense that's like, I can't do anything, what can I do? But actually, like, no, you have made me for a time such as this. And, like, heaven forgive me if I do not respond to it. Mm-hmm. Because Jesus will tell you, like, he will give you his voice. And so right now, today, what that looks like for us is having a conversation about it on a podcast. But, like, to be open and receptive to his voice and what he's asking of us. He will ask, and so but will we ask him? Mm-hmm. do we expect him to speak to us and to tell us what to do? But yeah, like, we can't know everything, but we can know his voice, and he'll show us. I believe that.
So yeah,
that gives me hope.
I'm like, I guess I should talk to my kids about everything. And I guess on the other hand, it's difficult for me to try to tell them what people of color are going through, because I have no idea. I can only imagine. I only get what I know from, like, seeing movies and so I think that's where I'm stuck. I'm like, how do I teach them, you know, besides just love everyone, like, no matter what they look like, short, tall, fat, thin, color of skin, like, just love them. Because everyone's going through a battle. Yeah. Some people are going through a lot harder, more difficult one. But, so I'm just stuck. Yeah. I'm just like, hope and healing. That's what keeps coming to me. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with it? Like,
you know, there's, this is, it's going to sound so ridiculous, but they say like in the church, it takes 100 years, for a teaching or, a counsel to take full effect, like 100 years. And we know as a people of faith that the Lord works in generations. It doesn't work in months. And so I think on both sides, we are really only, you know, 160 years now removed from a whole race of people being considered property in our country. And we're only 60 years removed from them being treated as second-class citizens legally in many ways. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to take a long time. Like there's a latent aspect of this where, again, like I said, it's kind of in the water, so to speak, and it's going to take a long time for it to heal. And we probably won't see it to completion in our own lifetime. And that shouldn't necessarily discourage us. What we just need to do is say, again, what is my call like on this walk, right? And so how do I educate my daughters, right, about these things so that, you know, they do see Jesus, you know, in the face of whoever they encounter. And that's their first thought, right? And that's the, I guess maybe that's what I'll leave with, is that kind of sad statement about myself is just, if when I see somebody, no matter who they are, he or she, if my first thought isn't, here's a child of God, then the gospel hasn't fully taken hold in my heart, and something else has. And that's what we need to pray that the Lord like overcomes in our society.
It's beautiful and necessary.
Yeah.
All right, ladies. This has been a blast.
Great. Happy Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody. Oh
man. No, but hope endures again, and that's the whole thing. We just need to be people that have the courage to be able to have these types of conversations, and to know that the Lord is victorious, right? And yeah. His grace can overcome everything, every obstacle, as long as we give it permission to. So that's my prayer.
That's good.
Beautiful.
Amen.
Amen. Do we have sparks?
maybe I'm going to start this novena. Maybe we should all do that together.
You didn't tell us the second devotion.
Oh, fasting.
That's what, okay, that was going to be my spark, but you go ahead.
Right. So I was going to say that I think we have... a call. I preached about it this morning. This is actually being recorded on Monday, so this Monday morning, and I think that again, as we see these spiritual realities that we're competing against. So St. Paul says, your struggle is not with flesh and blood, but against the powers and the principalities. And so when it comes to like the spiritual combat aspect of everything that's kind of going on in our society, to actually try to combat a spirit of division, a spirit of wrath that's I think is just running rampant right now in our society, that sometimes, as the Lord says, only by prayer and fasting can you overcome these things. And so I think I would invite our parishioners to kind of maybe rediscover what that looks like in their own lives, to kind of incorporate fasting in a more concrete way, and to kind of say that, you know, sometimes it's good for us to go physically hungry so we can be filled with the things of God and offer that up as part of our own spiritual warfare to bring about virtue in the world.
Beautiful. I'll add this for my spark because it was going to be that and commenting on his homily this morning, but I've encountered a unique concept which I haven't heard elsewhere before, but it's fasting from speaking. And so going into a situation or a room or something and offering up your opinions or your thoughts of what is being said, even if there's just truth that has to be said, even if there's an experience that someone's talking about that is so drastically different than your experience or reality, and just fasting from speaking so that it makes you greater able to receive, or greater able to listen. And then, yeah, the twofold practice of that would be not speaking in a certain situation, receiving and listening to what is actually being said, and then doing Lectio Divina with what was said. Even if, like, it's probably not scripture that this person is preaching to you. But yeah, whether it's a conversation about race or even just with your own, within your own family, just receiving what is being said and taking that to prayer in a way that is, allows Jesus to then speak on into it and comment on it. So yeah, it's fasting and feasting in a different sense. That's my spark.
Love it.
Do you have one?
It's my novena.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Right. Cool. But again, and this doesn't necessarily, we can cut this out too, but there's discernment. And so I think that's the fruit of what you're speaking about. Like when you fast from speaking right away, it allows you to discern the deeper issue that's actually kind of going on.
Sure.
So if somebody is, you know, all like, rah, 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 it's kind of like, okay, well, maybe what they're actually trying to communicate is they're hurt.
Yeah.
And they're afraid. And that's a much different conversation than the surface level that's kind of going on in some way, you know. Right. So, yeah. So fasting and the fruit of good discernment so that we can proclaim the gospel effectively and lovingly as we're called to.
Amen. I'm not cutting that out.
That was good.
Do you want me to?
No.
Okay.
Did you have one?
Yeah, I think fasting was it.
Okay.
All right. So okay. I think.
Penitence.
And happy 4th of July.
Fair fasting.
And with everything that's kind of going on, we didn't choose, many of us, to be born here or to, maybe some people did actually come to the United States, but with all of our complexity and all of our issues, I still do really believe that based on the Constitution and the laws that we have, that we have the potential to be, if we choose it, to be, you know, really a light to the other nations. So sometimes we can show the world our worst, but I think that we also have the opportunity to show the world our best, and that's what it means, yeah, to live out even the Constitution well, you know. Mm-hmm. We hold these truths to be self-evident, so.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
It's good to see you after 2 weeks.
Yeah, we missed you.
Yes. I'm praying for you all. That's legitimate. We are praying for you as a parish. Listens, so
next time I might want to talk about something more serious. Okay.
Maybe something that can make Shannon cry a little harder.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. We love y'all. God bless.
Bye.